meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com. It's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, yeah, we're here, and we've got a huge show tonight. We're going to take the Natalie Holloway investigation and look at it like it's never been looked at before. What I thought I would do, everyone has heard about or seen or read about or listened to the sting operation that was conducted, and Joran van der Sloot's confession, in my opinion, he's confessed several times, 10, 12 times in that tape. A little bit later on, I'm going to have one of the guys behind that confession, Peter R. DeVries, with us. But I thought what I'd do tonight is go to someone who's very close to the investigation, who was a big part of the investigation, and that's former Secret Service agent, current private investigator, Art Wood. Hi, Art.
Hi, Dana.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me on your show.
No problem. Welcome back to the program. This whole case has gone every which direction. It's gone around in circles and up and down and you name it. Now we have the confession, the videotape confession, and like you probably heard me say, I'm going to have Peter DeVries on a little bit later on.
Dana, I think that's wonderful that you're having Peter on. You know, I have to congratulate him. I have always said, and you can back me up on
yep.
this, every time I've been on your show, I've always said that this case can still be solved, that one of these kids would talk. I just never dreamed it would be Joran, and I'm so glad that Peter found a way to get him to talk.
Absolutely. He's a class act, and we'll hear more from him later. But you, law enforcement, a long time, myself, our listeners are very educated when it comes to these sorts of things. And when you look at a confession just isn't a confession. A confession isn't like the old Hollywood days where you take the pen and the paper and you write out point form what you did. A confession is probably 75% of the truth, 25% BS and bragging, but it's also a huge evidentiary aid as far as clues go. There are a lot of clues, and I know you've taken a look at the transcript and looked at the video, and there's a lot of clues here, isn't there?
There are, Dana, and I'm so surprised that you mentioned that, because I made a couple of notes today, and one of the notes I made is the clues are here, and there's no reason, there's absolutely no reason now that the Aruban authorities can't solve this case.
It's been handed to them on a silver platter, and
has been.
To excuse the term, but it's right there. And why don't we get at it? Why don't we talk about some of these clues? And of course, we don't want to give anything away or do anything that may jeopardize the investigation. But then again, has there been an investigation? It took a crime reporter to solve this case. But let's hope that there is some jurisprudence here, and this character finally does get taken before a judge.
Dana, listen, I saw Peter DeVries on a TV show last week, and he's got the right idea with this confession also. He thinks that Joran is telling the truth.
Yep.
Anybody, I don't know if all of your listeners have seen this confession. I don't know if they've seen these tapes, but it's pretty obvious to the average Joe watching this tape that this kid is telling the truth.
Yep.
His attorneys and his family are now saying that Joran was lying, that he did this to impress Patrick, and that he was under the influence of marijuana. Well, the truth is, it's pretty obvious that Joran smokes marijuana on a regular occasion, and that he, at no point did, was he stumbling for his words, or did it ever appear that he was lying. The only thing that I found in this whole confession where it appears that he's lying is that on one occasion he tells Patrick that I'll take that name to the grave with me.
Right.
And then the next day, Patrick says, is pushing him for a name, and he comes up with the name Dowry. I think he just threw that out there because he is going to take the name to the grave with him.
you know, evidence points towards several different things in this case, and speculation points several different ways in this case too. But there's a lot of things that are clear cut, and you make a good point. He's trying to use the defense of marijuana intoxication. However, his articulation is quite clear. He's almost to the point. In fact, I used it in an interview today that I'll play later. That he's bragging. He's very nonchalant. You can tell when someone's making up something. They stumble for their words. They grasp. You can catch them in contradictions. But this was very clear. He was telling the story about what he did.
You're absolutely right, and that's the impression that I got. At no point did I ever think he was lying, other than the fact that he made up a name for the friend. And I'm not sure there is a friend. We know that someone helped him get rid of this body. We know that someone came to his rescue. Whoever that is, could be his friends, plural. It could have been his father. I do want to bring you to one section of that transcript of that confession. And I just want to just read you this. It's one paragraph. I want your listeners to think about this. And here's what he said. He said, and he's talking about the person that came to his rescue. He says, he said, "No, this is not possible. You have to go home." I said, "No, I can't ask you to take responsibility for this." He said, "You're going home." I went home. That doesn't sound like an exchange between your aunt and a friend.
No, and that sounds...
sound like to you.
Well, that sounds a lot like an exchange to when I go out and I find my kid out after their curfew, and I say, "No, you're going home."
Absolutely,
yeah,
Dana.
Yep.
It sounds like a father and son exchange, exactly. And that's something that I'm sure that Peter is looked at. I'm sure, I hope the Aruban authorities are looking at it. As I said on the last time I was on your show, there should be some people shaking in their boots in Aruba, and not just these kids.
Well, I believe that there are a lot of people shaking in their boots right now. And one thing that's got blown up, and I'm proud to say that I was part of that information being brought out, and now it's gone out to a national level on the Greta Van Susteren program, is my interview with Jug Twitty a while back and in December, and we were talking about, you know, the first 48 hours, and he was mentioning some of the crazy questions that Aruban law enforcement were asking him, and one of the questions, and Beth Holloway will confirm it a little bit later on tonight because she's part of the program, about Natalie and seizures. And then, lo and behold, we hear Mr. Vandersloot talking about seizures on this tape, and if that doesn't shoot up 1,000 red flags, I don't know what does.
Well, it sure does. And as a matter of fact, the person that asked that question of Beth Twitty, too, not just Jug,
right,
asked Beth, and it was Dennis Jacobs. He flat out asked her if Natalie had any kind of medical condition like epilepsy that would cause seizures. And another thing that I want to tell you about, on June the 1st, when Dave Holloway arrived on the island of Aruba, he found Dennis Jacobs at the Nord Police Department. And Dennis Jacobs told him, "Why would you think about organizing a search? Your daughter probably just ran off. Why don't you go down to Carlos and Charlie's and have a beer, and eventually she'll show up down there." He also told Dave Holloway that he had interviewed those boys and that they weren't suspects, they were witnesses. So, you know, I think there's some people, you know, we've talked about this. We know, you know how I feel about Dennis Jacobs,
yep,
and Jan van der Straaten and some of the other Aruban police officers, and I have never bashed Aruban law enforcement. I've always stood up for them. I've always said that there are great police officers in Aruba just like there are any other country. The problem is they were never allowed to work on this case, and the people that controlled this case were helping a friend.
We keep hearing about cooperation on the cable news shows, and when you look at it factually, any case, and I had a couple of DAs on the program last week, including a DA that tried to prosecute OJ, Chris Darden, and he and I were talking about last week where you have a case like this, where you have a confession several confessions, you'd like to have a little something to go with it. And going back a couple of years now, Art, since I've had you on the program, there was physical evidence in this case, and you were part of it.
I brought it up that I had talked to a police officer that told me there was blood in that car, and that when it got to Holland, it turned out to be cleaning fluid. But he flat out told me straight up that there was blood in that car. And I found a belt out in the sand where another guy said that a body had been buried. So I'm just telling you, there was evidence. Things that aren't right there. We've known it for some time. And we've actually, everything that you and I have talked about has been relayed to the new Aruban prosecutor. So, you know, if people believe that the Aruban population suffered from a lack of tourism after Natalie went missing, they better watch out for what happens next if they don't solve this case.
It's huge, and the whole world is watching. And all you can say, you know, you sit back and you and I can talk about it and the listeners can talk about it, and some get angry and some get upset and whatever. But you have to wonder right from the get-go, why? Why did this go the way that it went? Incompetence, corruption, you name it. There are people that are being...
It went this way because the kid was a prince.
Yeah.
You know? His dad was a judge. And that's the way it went. And that's too bad. I saw on television where he's threatening that his family is worried that he's going to commit suicide.
Right.
Well, let me tell you what. It won't be because he's worried about Natalie Holloway. And that's what the problem is here. If this kid had a conscience, she would have been taken to a hospital no matter what his involvement was, and he wouldn't be staring at jail time.
When we go back to the transcript, Art, and you look at the video and you see, you and I agree that it's a well-spoken confession. He was talking, he was bragging, he was degrading Natalie. There were times that I would like to have reached through the TV and given him a slap. But that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. Here you have a case like this, and you look at the words, and you look at what he says, and he talks about if they ever find her, if they ever find her. When you have a confession, it isn't always, I did it, and here's how I did it. It's if they ever find her. That in itself is a confession.
There are so many admissions in this confession without saying I did it that it's unreal. He uses those words. He talks about his friends. He talks about a debt that he owes to this person that helped him get rid of Natalie's body. There's no question in my mind that the hardest thing for Dave Holloway and Beth Holloway right now, and their respective families, including Robin and the kids and Matt and everybody, is to have to listen to this creep call your daughter a bitch and a whore when she's dying. He says, I even shook the bitch.
Yeah.
Well, that's unreal. That's you know, that's callous. And it shows just how much of a sociopath he is.
It's unconscionable, but yet it's true because we've seen it. Yet to come back and try and defend it as, oh, you know, I lied before, I was lying this time, is very difficult, and I would say it should be impossible for him to go through. But you've been to Aruba, you know the system there, anything's possible. It's not that happy island, is it?
No, it's not. And, you know, there's different classes of people in Aruba, and Jorn was at the top of it, being Dutch and being the son of a judge. You know, I call him a prince when in fact it's not a monarchy, but at the same time, that's what happened. He was protected like a prince. And, you know, I want to bring you one more point here that comes to mind when we talk about what happened right after this girl went missing. Dave Holloway arrives on the island on June the 1st, which is 2 days after Beth gets there, and within 2 or 3 days, the first week of June, he ends up talking to a young man in the Holiday Inn named Michael Dompeg, who told him that the word was that Paulus Vandersloot borrowed a friend's boat. Now, we knew that from the very first week of June. And we give that information to the police. And guess what? We don't know whether Michael Dompeg heard it from other kids or he heard it from his father.
Absolutely. Gerald Dompeg was a figure in this case. We don't hear much about him now, but one has to wonder what stories he could tell and what evidence he could give in this case.
One of the things that's incredible is the silence following from the Reuben officials following this confession. They haven't been quick to step up to the plate and talk about this case at all, including people like Gerald Dompeg, Jan Vanderstraaten, Dennis Jacobs, Dolph Richardson, any of them. I haven't heard anything out of the Reuben authorities.
You follow this case closely, Art. Today was supposed to be the day that a decision would be made if Joran would be rearrested. Can you give us any inside information? Have you heard anything?
I haven't heard anything. I have an email into Jossie to see if he's heard anything. Quite frankly, nothing would surprise me. Certainly, they better think about putting him back in jail, because there's going to be an uproar from people all over the world if they don't. I mean, I don't think there's been 10 people out of the millions that have viewed this confession that thinks that he's lying.
When you look at the broad spectrum here, besides the audacity and the terribleness of the offense and taking Natalie's life, but there's a bigger picture after that as far as the prosecution, the investigation, Karen Janssen, Dompeg, Vanderstraaten, you name it. There should be some heads rolling, and I mean that as a term, not literally, but some people that have to answer to this whole mess. Do you think that'll ever happen?
They may not have to answer to it, but Joran should have to answer immediately.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, I stood side by side with Beth and Dave, and you're going to have Beth on your show. She'll tell you that. We begged the Prime Minister, the Justice Department in Aruba, the Attorney General, to remove Chief Dompeg, Dennis Jacobs, Karen Janssen from this case, and they wouldn't do it. So, quite frankly, that was 2.5 years ago we asked them to remove them from the case. And we gave them plenty of reasons. We gave them enough reasons there should have been internal investigations.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Just before I let you go, Art, and I appreciate you coming on tonight, where do you think this case will be 30 days from now?
Well, I'm hoping that we're going to get some corroboration of this so-called confession. There's 20 hours of tape of admissions and so forth and there's so much of it that can be corroborated. I'm not talking about necessarily. I would love to see him find the person that got rid of the body, or the persons, somebody would talk, that helped him take Natalie's lifeless body out to sea. I would love to see that. But there's so much other statements on this tape that can be corroborated. Little simple things like what he said he did at other times. And it's so easy to corroborate some of this stuff. So I would assume, and I would hope and pray, that the Reuben law enforcement has some solid people corroborating every word he says. Because all it takes is to prove it's truthful is to corroborate the little things.
Yeah, exactly. And you and I have...
That's where I expect it to be in 30 days. And Dana, I got to thank you for keeping this case in the forefront. I have so much respect for your commitment to the Holloways and the memory of Natalie. And I have a lot of respect for you, Dana, and I really appreciate it.
Well, it's simple. It's the right thing to do. And unfortunately, the right thing wasn't done from the beginning here, and we need to do what we can to bring justice back for this family. Thank you, Art.
Well, thank you, Dana. I appreciate it. And good luck to all your listeners tonight, and tell Beth I said hi.
We'll stay in touch.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. That's former Secret Service agent, current Holloway investigator Art Wood. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back in a minute here with Mike McIntyre. Mike McIntyre is no stranger to sting operations. He's written his own book about a undercover sting operation. He is also a crime reporter up here in Canada and hosts the Crime and Punishment radio show on the Chorus and Ralco radio networks. We'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio with Mike McIntyre.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Someone who is not a stranger to crime reporting, in fact, he's done some stories on sting operations himself, is here to talk about this Holloway sting operation. His name is Mike McIntyre. He's the host of Crime and Punishment and the website Mike on Crime. Hi, Mike. Welcome back.
Hey, Dana. Good to be here.
Now, this whole Holloway, you and I have talked about the Holloway case, me on your show, you on mine, many times, and I never thought, although I knew that Dutch crime reporter Peter DeVries, who I will be interviewing a little bit later on tonight, would be coming out with the type of information that he did and the sting information that he brought out on Jeroen van der Sloot. First of all, your thoughts, and then we'll get into the gist of it.
Well, as a member of the media, I mean, you have to tip your hat to what this reporter has done. I guess it's a fine line, Dana, between covering a story and becoming the story.
Exactly.
But this is a situation that is very unique. This is a case that, if not for his efforts, it seems like would have been dead and buried. But his information that's been uncovered and has become public in the last couple of weeks has certainly cast a new light and perhaps injected a new life into this case, a case that it seems like nobody is in much of a hurry to solve, other than the victim's family here, of course. And luckily, you've got a very aggressive reporter who has been digging, and has been able to uncover some, interesting evidence is one way to put it. Perhaps a bombshell is another way to put it.
Well, I don't think anyone's surprised as far as van der Sloot, the arrogance of the statements that he made. Some are just flat-out disgusting. But when you look at tapes like this and you look at the sting operation, and again, yeah, I agree with you. Hats off to Peter DeVries and his team for setting this up. There's a big difference between the type of sting operation that they were able to do here and what we call here in North America jailhouse confessions, where you put an undercover operative in the cell next to the guy that you want to confess, and it goes this way. The state, as far as we know, had nothing to do with this case, and it'll be interesting to see how far this goes in court. In fact, as of press time today, as of recording time right now, there's going to be a decision, I think, on the rearrest of Jeroen van der Sloot, and we haven't heard that yet. But your thoughts on this type of case going forward with this type of information, because like you say, law enforcement dropped the ball right from the beginning, and this is pretty much all they've got. We think there could be more.
Sure, and the jailhouse confessions you talk of, I mean, they have come under all sorts of scrutiny in North America, as they should, because you've got often disreputable characters that are setting the trap. Here we have a reporter, I would assume not a disreputable character, someone who's simply digging for the truth. This isn't a career criminal who trapped van der Sloot into a confession. So it will be very interesting to see legally what becomes of this, because on one hand you have a more reputable source. On the other hand, though, this is something that was done, I suppose, freelance and not as part of a police investigation. Will that ultimately hurt it? I would like to think of the Holloway case that the further you can get from an actual police investigation, the more positive things get, because the police investigation has been a joke from the get-go. And so, you know, this doesn't cast the police in a very good light, that you've got reporters going around doing the work that they should be doing. On the other hand, no doubt lawyers for Vandersloot here would make all sorts of challenges, and we've already heard some of the concerns coming from their camp, you know, exaggerating, joking, what have you, and will it stand the legal test? I guess the other question, Dana, to ask is, even if you accept everything that Vandersloot is saying in these confessions, where does that leave us?
Yeah.
What are we still dealing with? Is this a murder? Is this an accidental death slash cover-up? Is this a case of negligence? And I think that issue needs to be debated as well, because if we accept it, what are we left with?
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, you as a crime reporter, as a radio host, you must come across cases like this where all of a sudden some information comes your way, and the loyalty line is drawn as far as, is this more important to the paper, to the story, or should I just hold it, give it to the police? Was Peter DeVries right or wrong to come forward with the blockbuster information, or should he have just handed it over? He's done both, and I can't blame him for that, but it's interesting, Mike, you know, I'll put you in this role. All of a sudden, you work a case like this, law enforcement hasn't been able to do a darn thing, but you and your people are able to. What do you do? Do you release it to the paper first and then hand it over to the cops, or it's got to be a tough call?
Well, I perhaps some theory, but I think at the end of the day, yes, your craft, your trade is important, and being a journalist is a very important trade. You're the eyes and the ears of the public. You unearth truths and that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, you're a human being. And a case like this, where someone has died, where you come into possession of information that could be extremely valuable in where this case and where the investigation goes, I mean, you have to come forward and you have to go to police with it. If you can tie in a story on it as well, hey, all the better to you. But I don't think this story is about, you know, this isn't a reporter trying to make a name for himself.
No.
This is a reporter who's trying to get to the bottom of a mystery that, as I say, nobody else seems very eager to solve. And so I think he played this perfectly. He, you know, he's not clinging to some kind of journalistic right and refusing to hand over information to police. And we have seen cases like that where reporters, you know, refuse to disclose their sources because of the impact it may have on their profession. I think in this case, it was a no-brainer. He had to go to police with what he had, turn over the tapes. At the same time, you know, they've been able to obviously do stories on it, and pretty powerful stories,
yeah.
And I think this looks good on not only him, but the entire journalism profession as a whole.
Absolutely, and if you're just tuning in, Mike McIntyre from the Crime and Punishment Radio Show in Canada on Chorus, and Ralco Radio is here with us. We're talking about the undercover sting operation Peter DeVries pulled on Joern Vandersloot. Confessions are interesting, Mike, you know, from your line of work, and I know from this job that I do as a host and as my other job as a law enforcement officer. Confessions, as strange as it sounds, aren't always 100% accurate. No one comes out, although it's really rare, and every single word of his confession is the gospel truth. That's interesting, although it is sometimes confusing to those that listen and watch and read. Let's talk about confessions a little bit.
Well, I think it's important to look at the issue of whether anything was offered or promised to someone in exchange for a confession. And we've seen these cases, and this is an interesting parallel between Canada and the United States. Sting operations as a police tool are used quite regularly and quite effectively in Canada. They're outlawed in the U.S.
Right.
As you know, Dana, I've covered one particular one very intimately with my book, To the Grave, Inside a Spectacular RCMP Sting, that I wrote back in 2006, which looked at a Mr. Big undercover sting operation in Canada involving a murder suspect that ultimately led to not only a confession, but the discovery of the victim's body, a trial, and a prosecution on the most serious charge in the criminal code. In that case, the police operation did become the source of challenge on behalf of the lawyer for the accused killer. They said that this was a case of entrapment, that they induced the accused to lie, to exaggerate. At the end of the day, the judge disagreed with that, allowed all the evidence in, and you got the conviction. There have been cases, though, in Canada with these sting operations where the very arguments that were being made in this case I speak of that I wrote the book on have been successful. I can think of a case years ago where the suspect in a murder was an alcoholic.
Right.
And the police went and plied him with all kinds of liquor, got him drunk, and got a confession.
Yep.
They felt that was enough to lay a charge. They did. At trial, the judge threw the confession out. We've also seen cases where informants have been used, and as you mentioned earlier, you know, disreputable people have been placed in jail cells, and sometimes they wear wires, sometimes they don't, and just come to police with information they glean, and their evidence has been very much challenged and in some cases dismissed. I think it's important to look at whether or not you offer the accused anything in exchange for their testimony. If you offer them money, do you offer them booze, do you offer them a break, a deal? And if that's the case, you have to look at it obviously with a much more cynical eye than you do if no such promises are made, if it's just coffee talk. And in the case of Vandersloot here, you know a little more than I do, Dana, about all the circumstances surrounding this this recording, but I'm not aware that any promises were made to Vandersloot, hey, tell me what happened and I'll do some kind of a deal for you, or I'll make sure that, you know, this never gets heard. And without that kind of inducement, I think you have to look at a confession like this very seriously.
Well, this case is a case of someone gaining the trust of Vandersloot. Vandersloot's no dummy. Vandersloot was able to manipulate the system and still is to this day, and thinks that he may have got away with the so-called perfect crime. You hate to use that analogy, but they were able to get this operative to gain his trust and then wire up the truck and go from there. But just before I let you go, Mike, the last question I want to ask you is about the media. Obviously, the media has covered this case, has surrounded it. It's spun 360 degrees every which way. It's had North American, worldwide coverage. All of a sudden, now it comes to this like the final straw. Finding Natalie would be great evidence, corroborative evidence, if not just closure for the family to finally be able to bring her home. But do you see another story at another time coming up like this, or is this Holloway story a story in itself that we may never see again?
Well, you know, I think this is the perfect storm of stories.
Yeah.
It's got everything. It's got the attractive young American girl, the exotic locale, the setting for the crime, the mystery of, you know, where's her body, the cover-up, you know, so many questions. It's a perfect feeding frenzy for journalists of all kinds, including tabloid journalists. You know, we've all seen the cases, Dana, over the last few years. Since Holloway, there's been lots of other Americans, Canadians, that have been killed in foreign lands, often with all sorts of mystery and intrigue surrounding the circumstances, but nothing has generated the kind of publicity as Holloway. You know, maybe in a few years from now, once everybody's moved on from the Holloway case and whatever, you know, the Scott Peterson, or I guess the latest one is the other Peterson fellow in Chicago right now, the police officer and all his wives. I mean, there'll always be stories that will capture the public's imagination and the media's imagination. So, you know, I suspect we will see something along these lines again. It may be a while, but for now, this case has everything that you'd want, I guess, in a story that will dominate the 24-hour news cycle, that will churn out movies and books and that sort of thing. It's a great mystery.
Well, and hopefully this mystery, you know, is this finally the final nail in the coffin that will bring Natalie home and put Mr. Vandersloot in jail for a long time? I guess we'll wait and see. Mike McIntyre from the Crime and Punishment Radio Show. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Dana. Take care.
Bye-bye. That's Mike McIntyre from Crime and Punishment. And, yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens. There's a lot more to this story, a lot more to be told. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back. And we are right back. And I thought I'd spend some time with Mike McIntyre because he can share with you a been-there-done-that perspective as far as a crime reporter. Now, I talked to the ultimate crime reporter the other day, and I want to share a cute story with you. There's no more dedicated group of individuals and those at the Scared Monkeys forum and blog 24/7, 100% all the time. They're dedicated. The Red, Doug, Deb, Clausen, you name it, all of them, son. I could go on and on and on. I've never considered myself to be as dedicated as them, but I got to tell you a cute story. I've been wanting to interview Peter R. DeVries for some time. And finally, when we were able to come to an agreement as far as being able to set up an interview, I knew that Peter had been in New York and Los Angeles doing some high-profile media interviews with the mainstream media. And when I got a message back from him saying, yeah, no problem, I'll give you a call, I assumed that Peter R. DeVries was still in America. Well, the other night, I'm a night owl, I probably shut it down about 1:30, 2 o'clock, get to bed. 3:30 in the morning, the phone's ringing. I look at the phone, and my first instinct was, I'm getting called into work, I'll just, you know, give my head a shake and wake up. And I didn't realize that Peter R. DeVries was back in Holland, and it certainly wasn't 3:30 in the morning in Holland when he called me. However, I splashed a little water in my face, and the true dedicated monkey I am, I climbed out of the monkey bunkie and sat down, and we did this interview. So if I sound like I'm a little sleepy, it's because I am. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pritzer Show. I'm very pleased to have Peter R. DeVries, Dutch crime reporter, with me this evening to talk about the Natalie Holloway investigation and most recently the sting operation and where he and his team were able to capture Mr. Joran Vandersloot and get a confession from him, something that the Aruban police were not able to do after 2.5 years. Peter R. DeVries, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. 2.5 years later, I covered this program on my program many, many times. The disappearance of Natalie Holloway, talking to her mother, father, stepfather, you name it, everyone involved. One thing that no one expected was to see this come out. I have to congratulate you and your team, sir, for a job well done. But being a crime reporter for as long as you've been, did you expect that you would have to go to this extent and the police weren't able to?
Well, you never know, of course. I did an investigation on Aruba 18 months ago. And when I was there and saw everything, it all happened in 500 square meters, considering the lies Joran Vandersloot already told, I was thinking this case can be and must be solved, and that's why I continued.
The experience that you've had over 30 years, have you ever been involved with a person like Joran Vandersloot, the type of personality that he is, the type of some would say narcissistic or sociopathic traits that he shows? Have you ever had any case like this before, or is this a first time?
Oh yeah, I've seen many people like him in all the cases I've been investigating. In 30 years I have been investigating for almost 500 murder and disappearances, and I saw this kind of people many times. They have no regrets, they speak with disrespect about the victim, no remorse at all, and they only feel pity for themselves. I've seen that many times.
That's very well said, because when we watch the interview, you see the response that Vandersloot gives. It must have been so difficult for the family, in particular Beth Holloway, Dave Holloway, Jug Twitty, to see this. What sort of reaction did you get from Beth at the time? Of course, we saw what we saw on the television program, but we didn't see all the behind-the-scenes information. How did Beth react?
Beth reacted very emotional, and well, of course, you can imagine that she was outraged about it, because the lack of respect, he was calling her the bitch and the whore all the time, and that's the most awful thing which can happen for a mother who lost her child.
Dutch crime reporter Peter R. DeVries joins us this evening. Peter, the case itself, we're hearing in the news here that authorities have delayed the decision as far as rearresting Vandersloot. This case has bounced around so many different times and so many arrests and rearrests, and we don't really know what's going to happen. The confidence, I guess, in the Aruban authorities is, well, at one time at an all-time low. Is it possible for you to comment on where you think this case will go next, or you, maybe you just don't know?
Well, I'm quite sure that Joran van der Sloot will stand trial sooner or later. I'm pretty sure about that.
Now, with the, as you know, being involved in crime reporting for so long, and my audience and myself, not only as a talk show host, but as a law enforcement officer, we know that confessions aren't always word for word the truth. And we hear this term or this name Drury come up as far as who this person is and what they've been. A lot of speculation. What can you tell us? And a lot of people are saying that Drury is actually Paulus van der Sloot.
Well, I don't know that, but what I can say is that I have the impression that Joran van der Sloot is protecting somebody else by mentioning the name of Drury. In the during the first drive, he told Patrick, our infiltrant, I never gonna mention the name of the guy who helped me. I will take that into my grave. And the next day, when we instructed the infiltrant to push a little bit on that name, and he was asking, why don't you tell me? You can trust me, and etc. And then he mentioned the name Drury. But already at that moment, we had the impression that he was protecting somebody else and just mentioned a name. So, and who the helper really is, well, that's speculating.
Exactly, and hopefully the Aruban law enforcement and law enforcement investigators are working on that. Let's talk about you a little bit here. Again, your experience, as long as you've been involved in a case like this, the international news media have been all over this case for such a long time, both looking at it so many different ways. The case has been spun so many ways. I know that you've probably been very busy in the media. How do you think that the international media have done covering the disappearance of Natalie Holloway?
Well, of course, there was a lot of media attention over this this disappearance, but it was only attention. Just a few people did really investigative journalism.
Exactly.
That's the point. Most of the media is not doing really investigation, but is only taking things over. If you know what I mean, they don't investigate by themselves, but they are just doing stand-uppers at the beach and not knowing anything.
What's next for you and your team? I'm sure you're quite busy.
Well, we continue our investigation, and at this moment we consider the case as solved in the way that Joran did a confession on tape, not once, not twice, but more than 10 times on several days. And together with the evidence which was already lying there, I think you can say the case is solved. But now it's up to the justice system to get him into jail.
Absolutely. Well, Peter, I want to thank you, of course, on behalf of myself and my audience, for doing something that law enforcement were not able to do, to bring some answers to the family that long deserved them. Of course, we all hope that Natalie will be recovered, found, and taken home where she belongs, and those responsible will be brought to justice. Again, I want to thank you and congratulate you for a job well done.
Okay, thank you very much. You're welcome.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. That's Dutch crime reporter Peter R. DeVries. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, here's your host, Dana Pretzer.
Welcome back. Many of us define justice as what happens in court. Someone is arrested, someone is taken to court, and they are sentenced. After that, we may complain about the sentence and say maybe the judge was too hard or the judge was too lenient. But there are other ways that justice can be served. Some will say vigilante justice. We don't approve of that here. We don't appreciate it, and we consider that to be illegal. But sometimes justice can be knowing the answer to what really happened. Someone, I think, who knows the answer as far as what really happened to her daughter, Natalie, is Beth Holloway, and I welcome her back to the program. Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Listen, before we get started with the interview, many news reports have said that Reuben authorities would be announcing today if there was going to be a rearrest of Joran Vandersloot. Have you heard anything?
No, I have not heard anything as of yet.
Yeah, I've been checking my sources and contacts, and I haven't heard anything either, but hopefully we'll have some good news. All right, let's set that aside. I'm going to be speaking to Peter R. DeVries this evening. Peter R. DeVries must hold a special place in your heart. Tell us about that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think that we all would have to hail Peter DeVries as the king, and I'm sure he does not like to be referred to that at all.
No.
But I just can't help it. He's just, I think we can all say he was heroic and that he stepped forward and, you know, in order to, bring light onto what happened and to, all the circumstances surrounding Natalie's disappearance. And, you know, I feel as if I cannot say thank you to Peter DeVries without also Patrick, you know, the,
yes,
this young man that, you know, who's just a father and, wanted to see the right thing done, who stepped forward to also partner with Peter DeVries and make this all possible. So, absolutely heroic for both of them.
Peter DeVries and his team have done a stand-up job better than the law enforcement have ever done. Hopefully this will result in some court appearances and some convictions. Time will tell. But, you know, Beth, I've interviewed you several times on the program, and we've talked about answers. Answers are something that you've been looking for. Obviously, you're also looking for your daughter, and we all hope and pray that you'll be able to bring her home soon. But did you receive the answers that you were looking for by watching that undercover tape?
Well, absolutely, I did. And I think I have to even back it up to what you said when you were opening your show. And, Dana, it is, justice does come in many different forms, just as I've learned in many different forms. And for me, justice came as just an answer, and yes, I did receive the answer. And secondly, you know, I think I've felt some justice and just validation of the fight, and meaning that, you know, every step that we took was well worth it. And you know, of course, the third form of justice I would love to see, and I think everyone else would, is to see Joran Vandersloot behind bars. And
yes,
I do feel strongly that he is a time bomb, and he's waiting to go off, and he will strike again. And so it's not just for Natalie that I would like to see him behind bars, as I think that he could certainly strike again, and I think he will strike again. I think that he was only building in his behaviors and recklessness, and I think he's shown us all he has no control over himself or his actions.
Countries, islands, cities, towns, whatever, their leaders take a vow, they swear an oath that they protect their citizenry. They protect their citizenry, they protect their visitors. Aruba obviously failed in the situation. Crime does happen, we all understand that, but it's the goal and the responsibility of organizations, countries, law enforcement, you name it, to conduct a proper investigation. Now that this has gone to this extreme, and I know you've been somewhat reluctant in the past to talk about it because you were concentrating on finding your daughter, and we all understand that. But when I've interviewed Jug and Dave and others, and we've talked about situations where the strange questions that you were asked when you first arrived on the island, Jug and I spoke about that here back in December, and now it's become pretty obvious that there has to be more to the story than what we're hearing, that some would say that there's corruption and cover-up right from the beginning. I know that's not going to help bring Jorn Vandersloot to justice and put him behind bars, and maybe it's something that needs to be dealt with later. But I'm curious, Beth, on your take on now compared to 3-4 months ago.
Well, you're exactly right. There are two different tracks, and one is to stay focused on Jorn and his admissions and what the investigators and prosecution can now do with him. But I think the second thing that we face eventually is we need to get to the bottom of exactly what was transpiring in the first 48 hours of Natalie's disappearance. And, you know, to set aside Jorn, we have to look at, we had some stunning revelations that were being admitted from Jorn as he was describing them. Couldn't help but take us back to the very beginning, the first 48 hours of her disappearance, where a lead detective asked us only one medical question, and it was this: does Natalie have a history of epilepsy or seizures? And the answer, of course, was no. And we didn't know why that question kept resurfacing during the months of Natalie's disappearance, but I think that our stunning revelation was when Jorn admitted that to Patrick. It is very suspicious, and it's certainly a red flag that needs to be delved into. There is a reason why this was asked of us, and we need to get to the bottom to find out why. So I think there are two different tracks, but the one I really want to stay focused on right now is Jorn and his admissions. And as far as delving into what happened in the first 48 hours, that's just going to be a whole separate ball game.
I agree with you completely, and it's something that we'll stay focused on for sure. The old saying, Beth, and without trying to be callous here, parents aren't supposed to bury their children. Children are supposed to bury their parents. When you see a video like you saw, and I've used these terms, callous, cold, arrogant, and some that I can't say on the radio, it must have made your skin crawl to watch this individual bragging, degrading your daughter the way that he did. It was just absolutely sickening.
Well, Matt, you know, you're right. Parents are not supposed to bury their children. And what is just so sickening to me is Jorn has decided to bury everyone. Natalie, his parents, his entire, his mother. I felt from day one his father has been involved. But due to Jorn's actions, of course, he has buried his father deeply into this with him. I do think his father played a major role in Natalie's disappearance. But I think about his family. I think about all the people that stepped forward to try to help. I mean, he's just stepped, and he would just bury anyone, step on anyone's back in order to protect himself. So I think he's just blatantly showing us he has an utter disregard for any other's, human existence but his own. So he would stop at nothing to bury anyone. He doesn't care.
I'm going to throw out some names to you, and I know you've done this line of questioning before from other show hosts, but I'm curious to see what you have to say. When I mentioned the name Jossie Mansour.
Oh, absolutely heroic. What a man. What a father. What a husband he is my goodness. What a businessman he is. Integrity. And, I stand by Jossie because this is an individual that steps forward for human rights and for justice. And, what he did for me was he took such a burden off of me during the month of July of 2005 when I felt as if I was kind of out there at the forefront of by myself going against these perpetrators until Jossie Mansour stepped forward. I felt like I had no other ally. So, he did the most amazing thing, and he went out on a limb, and he, for no reason other than just doing the right thing, and as I said, being about professionalism, integrity, and respect for other human rights. So, absolutely, what an amazing man.
If I was to mention the name Vanderstraaten.
Well, he's corrupt to his core of existence.
I think that just absolutely nails it. I was sitting here just doodling on a pad of paper to see what you might write, and we wrote exactly the same thing. It's just
he doesn't even deserve any more words.
Absolutely, I figured you'd just use the word corrupt. When you look at the media coverage of the story, and you see that 99.999% of those that watch, listen, and read about this story care, want to see the answers, want to see your family finally get the justice that you all deserve. Your take on how the media have handled this case, Beth?
Well, I think it's been remarkable, and I have, gosh, you know, as I said, my only allies in Aruba were the media and Jossie Mansour. So I think they rank very high. I mean, and what a remarkable resource that that for parents to, or families to be able to mobilize when they're faced with a crisis, whether it's, you know, missing or murdered loved one, and they can be very powerful. And they were just a great ally to me on the island of Aruba, so very grateful for them. They were always very respectful, too, so...
Your book, Loving Natalie, wonderful book. If this finally gets closed, this case gets closed, and you were to write an epilogue in the book, what would the last two lines of that epilogue be?
Ooh, well, first, I don't know that I would ever do that. And secondly, I guess it's that hope does not disappoint. And I think that that's what I would just end it with, is hope does not disappoint. And it's easy to give in to the pain and to let go of hope, but I've learned through this journey that every step you take,
the protecting or the talking to parents about preparing and protecting your loved ones when they go out on trips like this, and how to be prepared, because most people, yourself included, would never expect anything like this to happen. A couple of words of wisdom for Mr. and Mrs. Smith, whose young daughter is about to take a trip to the Bahamas on a school vacation. What would you say to them?
Well, if I had to do a couple of words, there'd have to be communication and education, and I think those are key. I think communication, I think that my book, for one, can be a starting ground. It can be the an opening centerpiece for parents to, you know, have those conversations with their young adults about the many things they may not have talked with a while, everything from faith to personal safety. I think then education, of course, would be my second biggest, you know, talking point, and that would be logging on to the website, just really choosing that format, that venue, to discuss how you want to go about, you know, ensuring your own personal safety, everything from international calling to medical things you must take care of before you depart our borders. So I think if I just said two words, I mean, communication could start with the book, and education could start with the foundation. So I think those would be the two key areas I think that, you know, parents begin to delve into. And, boy, I know they're pretty broad, encompasses a lot. But, you know, I think that the book and the foundation can splinter off into many different areas of concerns that each family would have if they have a young one departing our borders.
Absolutely. Beth, I know on behalf of myself and all the rest of the Scared Monkeys, we support you 1,000%. Our fingers are crossed that the answers that you so rightly deserve and your family deserve will come to you, and I appreciate you joining us.
Okay, thank you so much, okay?
Take care, Beth.
Of course, it's been incredible. Thank you. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. That's Beth Holloway, and, you know, what more can you say than what's already been said? This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You know, obviously that was a recorded interview, and I do have to apologize for some of the sound quality. Sometimes with cell phones, you just can't get a clean signal, and but I think the words were very clear, and we could understand from the heart of the lady who's very deeply involved in this. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. One thing that you have to remember, and I think we all understand, is the Peter DeVries undercover sting operation was a real good start. This case is far from being over. It's far from being solved. This case will be solved when Joran van der Sloot is sentenced to a lengthy incarceration term in a jail of the judge's choosing. Will that happen? We can hope. We can hope that the crew of the Persistence will find Natalie and bring her home to her family where she belongs. That is so important for everyone. Will there be more to this story? You bet your boots there will be. And we will cover it here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Now, I promised to do this. I don't normally do this, but I will open up the phone for a few minutes here to take some phone calls. What did you think of tonight's program? What do you think of the case? What do you think of the undercover operation that was performed here and the confessions, plural, of Joran van der Sloot? You can call me now, 306-842-7884. I always get accused of saying the number too fast, so I'll say it slow, 306-842-7884. It's not a toll-free number. I won't keep you on the air very long, but you certainly can call in. I'd like to hear what you have to say about this. Of course, I want to thank all my guests this evening. They take away from their time to share what they have to say for you, and I'm just the host, and we try to give you a little different perspective, something that you don't normally hear, see, or read in the mainstream, and that's why we call this Main Street Media here at Scared Monkeys Radio. So again, it's 306-842-7884. You can call in and we can talk about tonight's program. And I remind you that the webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There, if you missed part of tonight's show, it will be archived and available later for podcasting download. It's actually really neat. Once you get to the webpage, you can just play the show right from there. You don't even have to download it. And you can pick up the daily commentary and shows. I think they go back even a couple of years now. So if you've missed any, you certainly can go on and get them there. iTunes has the program and several other locations. So again, it's 306-842-7884. You can call in and we can talk about tonight's program, and we'll do that with this caller. Hello, caller.
Hey, Dana, it's Red. How are you this evening?
I'm doing fine. It's, it's not normally do we focus on just one topic during a show. We usually cover four or five, but I thought it'd be really important tonight to spend the hour, actually a little more than an hour now, on the Holloway case and try to get as many good guests as we can. And I think we did a pretty darn good job. Help with from you also, and I appreciate that.
Oh, please. I mean, it's all part of the common goal, Dana. I mean, Beth had some, Beth has brought up some great points. I mean, Mike brought up probably one of the best points of the evening in saying that if we could get the investigation as far away from the Aruban police, we'll probably solve the thing.
I laughed.
Unfortunately, the sad reality is that's probably the truth. And, what Peter DeVries did was, it's something, and he referenced it this evening, you don't see it that much on television anymore, and it's one of the problems that I have with television, with the news, is that it's gotten into complete tabloid television, and they've gotten away from the investigative aspect of, whether it be solving cases, whether it be delving into, political crime, you name it. I mean, they take the sensational approach, throw some pundits on who know less than nothing, but they're not even really that in tune with the nuances of a case. They tell them this is what you're talking about, and you get some of the most ridiculous dribble you could ever listen to. And what Peter DeVries did is something that, you and I both grew up with.
Yeah.
The investigative reporter getting to the bottom, and it's so stunning that he was able to do this, and it's so refreshing that somebody, went out of their way and pulled this coup. And we all just sit back and say, when you got the defense attorneys, in absolute free-fall spin, you know you've done your job.
You know, when we talk about the case and the case being solved, that term is a little bit subjective because it's not solved. An investigation and a case, proving a case, is a puzzle. You know that. But I would say darn sure that all the pieces of this puzzle are in the box. They just need to be put together. And let's hope that they're able to do that.
Yeah, and I think Peter, when Peter says it's solved, I think... he's not just looking at from what he's done.
No.
I think he's connecting all the dots. I think he's looking at the stuff that was taken in the past, statements that were said. When the pundits are on the talk shows and they talk about corroborating evidence, it's there. I mean, all you have to do is read.
Yeah.
It's there. I mean, all these people have to do is stop talking and hearing themselves talk and actually look at the investigation, read the stuff that's been put out on the internet. And I don't mean just the subjective stuff or the opinion stuff. I'm talking about the facts that are out there, that so many people have done probably more work and more hard work than many of the TV shows and the producers out there, which they have the resources to do. This is just John Q. Public devoting their time and their effort and their love for this family to want to get answers for what's happened to Natalie. I mean, there's so much out there that's so obvious. I mean, and then like I said, I mean, you know, you got the upper hand when the lawyers have come up with three or four different ways to try to spin the story, and they're throwing anything up on the wall hoping that it sticks. When the public opinion starts to sway, when you have people in Aruba like a Rudy Cruz, who has really been no friend of the family, that's for sure.
That's true.
Turn on Yoron. There's that thing called momentum. It happens in sports. It happens in politics. It's happening right now in this case. And when you start to lose the case in the court of public opinion, and it's not just in the United States, when you start to lose it in Aruba with your own people, when you start to lose it in Holland with so many Dutch people on the Dutch blogs have just persecuted and crucified him, you are unmercifully more than we could ever, because he's one of theirs. And they finally, you know, had it slapped in their face what this guy was all about. And, you know, Beth graciously has, you know, been front and center answering, you know, the questions that you've asked tonight about just the rotten comments that Yoren made, and so flip in saying them that, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that if someone is so rotten and callous, do you really honestly think that they had any good intention when they were with Natalie, whether it be on a beach or whether it be anywhere? Or that anything that this guy has to, he's capable of anything. And when he does it, when he does some of this stuff in front of a camera, you know, we can only wonder, Dana, what this man is capable of when the lights are turned out and nobody's looking.
Absolutely. Well said. I'll see if I can take some other calls. I appreciate it, Red.
Thank you so much, Dana. Great job.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, I'll stay on long enough to take a couple more calls if you are interested. Again, 1-306-842-7884. 1-306-842-7884. I won't keep you on long, but I'm really curious on your take on all this. And there's so much commitment. There's so much passion, there's so much understanding, there's so much wanting to help and wanting to do the right thing in this case. And I think it's a commonality, it's a goal for most to bring justice to this case. And as I prefaced the interview with Beth Holloway, justice is served in many forms, not just by bringing someone to trial and taking them to court. There are other ways. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Dana.
Hi.
I just wanted to thank you for the wonderful show that you did tonight.
Thank you.
And I just had to make a contrast. The night that the show aired in Holland, there were lots of folks on Scared Mikey doing transcripts. So we were getting the story piece by piece and little snippets of videotapes. When it aired on ABC in the United States, I kept watching, and it was very dramatic, and I kept waiting for the piece where Beth saw the video for the first time. That was a picture of the pain. It was full circle. It was all full circle, and you could see it all on her face, all on her reactions and her body movements. And this woman, who we've all respected, admired, felt for, she'd been so strong and she couldn't contain it all. And ABC didn't carry that.
Yeah.
Holland did, but they didn't. And I couldn't help but think tonight when I was listening to your show how you would have handled that, and you would have gotten that. You get it. You get it in your continued coverage of this case. You get it in the guests that you have on your show. You get it in the questions that you ask and the answers that you solicit. So I just wanted to get through to tell you how much I appreciate it, and I know all of the monkeys on Scared Monkey City.
I appreciate it. Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye. 1-306-842-7884. I'm just a small part of this, and without you, it would be pretty much impossible to do a show. And yeah, that was obviously a production decision, and I think a wrong decision on ABC's part, because the old saying, a picture does paint 1,000 words or something like that, it just makes a big difference. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Dana.
Hello.
Hi. I've been following this case since about day one.
Right.
Mostly on Scared Monkeys.
Right.
And, you know, I can't say enough about how everyone has done such a great job keeping this case in the news. And we've had our ups and downs as the case goes on. But now we're at a point with Peter DeVries getting that confession, so to speak, on the air. That's great. We all hope that Moss and the Aruba Department prosecutor does what they should do. And a lot of the focus right now is on Jorn and trying to get him prosecuted. But I think everybody on Scared Monkeys assumes that to begin with, that that's a no-brainer, that has to happen.
Right.
But if that doesn't happen, or if it does happen, regardless... Is there a plan to go after the corruption?
Yeah.
To go after Jan Vander... I'm sorry, I can't...
You're thinking of Vander Straaten.
Straaten.
Right.
And Karen Jansen.
Yeah.
And all the others that obviously were corrupt from day one. I mean, it the more and more that comes out, it seems very obvious that, you know, a body was probably discovered, Natalie's body was probably discovered very early. And I think Jug alluded to, you know, the world would be shocked at what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Cover up. There's just so many questions about that. But
yep.
The point that I'm trying to make is, regardless of whether Jorn is prosecutor or not, if he's, you know, everybody wants him to be put away for life, but we can't stop there. That's just the tip of the iceberg.
I couldn't agree more. There's two prongs to this investigation, the investigation itself, and the other one is getting the answers. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, time for one more call before we call it a night. 1-306-842-7884. Yeah, there's a big, huge picture here. Like I said, the puzzle pieces are all there. It's just they not need to be put together. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Dana.
Hello.
I have one question that I was thinking about listening to your show tonight.
Sure.
Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
But, you know, they asked Beth and Jug and Dave, did Natalie have a history of seizures or
correct.
Epilepsy?
Yep.
What would have happened if their answer had been yes?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And
did they have Natalie's remains? Did they have a story all worked out?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. You know, and we could speculate, yeah, she does have a history of seizures. Oh, well, we can explain this, and it was just a tragic. Could it have gone that way? It's very possible. That's a great point you just made.
That's all I wanted to say. Thanks. Great show.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Oops, I hit the wrong button. All right, that's it. That is Scared Monkeys Radio for another evening. And I again remind you to go to the webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com to listen to the show and others. And remember scaredmonkeys.com for all your blog and forum needs and entertainment. Thank you all. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.